So Uber and Jewish law. So there's so two issues that I really, one is works around the employment issue, which is really the legal issue that is being fought out right now. Apparently, I have up to the day article on that. And then there is the other issue to think of is the Hasagas Gvul, which is kind of why everybody's upset with Uber. I mean, nobody's really overall upset with them because of their employment question. That's just the mechanism to demonstrate our upsetness with them over the Hasagas Gvul issue. I mean, the taxi cab drivers, companies that have been here forever, so they don't like the fact that Uber is now coming in and taking all of the business. So do they have the right to such a time? Does such a complaint actually exist? So those are the two main issues to discuss. So number one, there is in halacha, there is several ways of that somebody could be paying somebody else for some amount of service. So the classic form of paying somebody for service is that you are a worker for that person and you have a job. You have a full-time job. You're the secretary, you're the farmer, you're the sharecropper, whatever. That person is called a poel. That you get, well, we'll figure out how to define it. That is a regular worker. However, there is also a category in halacha known as a contractor, that you come in and you're doing a job. So that person is called a kabbalan. So what is the difference between the two? So one difference between the two is whether you can quit in the middle and what the repercussions are for that. So if you are a poel, if you're a worker, so in the middle of the day, you could just say, assuming that you're not in the middle of some project and it's going to cause a loss to the employee, whatever, but it just if you're a secretary, one could get up at lunchtime and say, I am coming back. I'm finished. And you can get paid for the morning. Up until that moment which you work, you get paid for it. From then on, you don't. As opposed to a kablan, where if you promise that I'm going to do a job for somebody and you decide to quit in the middle, so you get nothing. Right? So that is borne out in a Tosfos, Maseches Bava Metzia, where the Gemara mentions that you should make a when you go for a haircut, one should make a kinyan with the barber to make sure that they're actually going to do the whole haircut. Why? So mikan omer Rabbeinu Tam, that's what Tosfos comments, that sofer shasacher atzmo imashchu imenu komus otar shelo ein yicholin shuv lachsur behem. That if they pull it away, so you can't, you're not allowed to back out of the deal. That if a barber decides in the middle that, oh, I want to cut that person's hair instead of your hair, they can't just leave you with half your hair cut off. That's not going to work. So the Tosfos asks, wait a second, Vim Tomar, Maishna Mi Poel. Why is that any different than a Poel? A Poel is the regular worker, the Yachol Achzerba, where he could back out at any moment. V'yesh Lomer, the Poel Dafka, D'chziv Bey, Avada Haim, V'lo Avadim La'avadim. That a poel is specifically a person that does not have that is not bound by their employment contract, because the pasuk says Hashem talks about the Jewish people as avadaihem, they're going to work for me, they are my servants or my slaves, and they're not slaves to other slaves. So yachol achzer bo v'lo kablan. So they're allowed to back out, but a kablan's not allowed to back out. So that's the main difference between the two, that a poel versus a kablan. So the question then gets into the details. Okay, so there are a few other details. We'll get to one significant distinction shortly, but what are the details of defining the difference between a poel and a kablan, keeping in mind the Uber driver, which we'll set up for shortly. So the sma is a commentary on on the sides of the Shulchan Aruch and Choshen Mishpat, the Sefer Meiras Einayim. So he comments as follows: V'im hu kablon shekibul alav melacha b'kach v'kach, that he is a kablon that he gets paid for the job. Perish ve'eno ke'eved de meleches rabba mutel salav lasok bo kol hayom b'li hefsek. That it, as opposed to a worker is responsible for the entire time that he is a worker, and he's not allowed to take a break. Aval zeh gomer melacha shekibul alav ezeh shah b'yom sheyirtzeh. What about a kablan? A kablan can work at his own pace. Now, he might have a due date, he might have a responsibility to get the plumbing job done by a certain amount of time, but he can make up his own hours. So, v'chderach kol balabatim ha'osa malacha shalom limkor v'lishtach yerba. Like any balabas, like any owner, they could do the work whenever they want in order to make the sale whenever they want. It's their prerogative. Mishum hachi gamhu eno yachol achzer bo v'im chazer bo yado al ha'tachtonis. So therefore, he's not allowed to back out, meaning the kablan. And if he does back out, he's got the disadvantage in a court case. But what is the smud defining as a distinction between a kablan versus a poel, whether you make your own hours or not. That would define him as a kablan. So that being the case, we wink over to Uber a little bit. All right, so how does Uber work? Uber is a person decides, I'm going to work now. He turns on his phone, I think. He turns on his app, says, yes, I'm on now. And he waits for the pings to come in, asking whether he's going to take a job or not.
And
now,
he can choose which one.
Now he, well, yes and no. This is a little discovery I made. But if you deny enough jobs, your favorability rating goes down.
Oh,
right? So you sort of have the freedom to choose which ones you want or not, but you don't. But you are supposed to be working up your favorability ratings. I'm not sure what you get by doing so, other than the person that you're picking up, when it gets offered to you, this person's right, they see your favorability ratings, and I think they can deny you. So you want to maintain that favorability rating as high as you can. So you, yes and no. I actually saw somebody make one blog I took a quick glance at. The idea was, if you don't want a certain job, you shouldn't say no. You should just put your phone onto airplane mode very quickly, and then the Uber system picks up that you just had a connectivity issue. You didn't actually deny the job. You heard it here first. So, but you are deciding when you want to work and when you don't want to work. That is the key here. So, sounding like you become a poel rather a kablan rather than a poel. Trumas Hadeshin has a slightly different understanding. The Trumas Hadeshin says v'nira nidon kablanusi, that this case is a case of kablanus. The question was something about the harvesting a field and you only got through half of it or something. So v'yafal gav di mei habitzir katzavto yadua ve'ein meshubad raks man hazeh, that the harvest is what sets your time and you're meshubad at that time. Mikol makom achol ve'eino kotzev lo schar lefi hayamim o hashvuos o achadashim di'ikle hamalachach Chashuv Kablanus, that because it's not set based on the amount of days or the amount of weeks, you are therefore considered a Kablan. What does he mean by that? Right, Kamal Luxor Dimeakatsir Nami Yudunim, that you are doing a job. If you're paid for a job rather than paid for the time, so then you are considered a Kablan rather than a Poel. So then, yeah? Right. So what are taxis doing? Are you being paid for the job or are you being paid for the time? So it's a good question.
And car services too.
Right. So the way it works in Philadelphia, the way Uber is set up in Philadelphia, apparently every city has their own rules about how this works. But in Philadelphia it works that you're being paid by the mile, unless you're going under 11 miles an hour, in which case you're being paid by the time. Which is similar to other cities, but it's a little.
You
apparently, it's a little different
taxes
than other ones.
Yeah,
that's the way Uber. That's why Uber thing is set up. Also,
So they took the taxi rules and made Uber comply with the taxi rules.
Right. So, are you being paid by the job? Being paid by the time? So that's
about in the suburbs.
What's the difference?
The city of Philadelphia. Or?
Oh, I don't know. When I became an Uber driver and rode in and they asked me for my city, I wrote Wynwood and didn't register. It said you didn't fill in that thing appropriately, and I had to change it to Philadelphia. So I wasn't sure if that meant that. Therefore, I wouldn't. I assume that means I would still drive someone to Wynwood. I assume you could still pick up an Uber at your house. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Right. Okay. So. So I'm not sure. So anyway, so according to this Trumas Hadeshin, one can perhaps make a case that you are a poel, but it seems to me that even according to both opinions, you would really be considered a kablan when it comes to an Uber driver, even if you want to claim, well, you're being paid for the time that you're in the car when you're going under 11 miles an hour, but it's still really being paid for the job. I mean, that's only because we want to give you a little bit extra money for being stuck in traffic. It's not really that you're being paid because you're spending this amount of time. That's just the way that they're incorporating it as the part of the job. So there was a case that came up this past summer, apparently based on the Wikipedia article. It was really decided by the government labor agency, but then it sounds like it was also tried in court as well, where they argued that the that an Uber driver is actually a worker. It argues that, the underlying part, argues that any worker who is economically dependent on the employer should be treated as an employee. So therefore, the only way, so Uber wants to claim, no, we're just the shadchan, that really they're all independent workers, and we just set them up. We're just the platform where everybody could find their job. That's the way they want to spell it, plus they want to be considered poalim. The fact that in California they declared that Uber is not an Uber driver is not a koblin, but rather is a poal, has ramifications in terms of benefits to workers. So they could claim that we need to be paid for the gas that we use. I don't know if the cars, but that would open the doors to making minimum wage and making... And certain types of benefits which a person is going to require. So, and that would pretty much smash the entire system of Uber if such a thing would be adopted. This was actually
there's
also tax ramifications, right? So, what I found odd is that this was there was a class action lawsuit that did this as well. That Uber drivers were the ones that brought it. That's a little odd to me because you would lose your. If Uber closes down, you're out of a job. Like, I wasn't sure what their challenge was, why they would be the ones to bring the challenge. I would think Uber drivers would be happy with it. Right, I understand, but...
To be employees. Yeah.
Right, but then Uber's going to say, forget it, we're out of here. If you're going to force us... Okay. So they're suing for more benefits. So that it sounded like that passed. I don't know if it changed the way it works out in California. One can ask... Right, you could ask Jeb, a practice, because there was a whole news article this past summer that he went to San Francisco to campaign for a day and took Uber to all of his campaign stops because he wanted to embrace that the new technology. While I think on the Democrat side they said no, we're against Uber because they're pro union and all that kind of stuff. Okay, so that was what happened. My chavrusa in the morning.
Because no one would ever want to have an Uber driver in Florida, based on. Drivers in Florida.
It's true. The market pulls up. It's going to be interesting. It'll be their last drive.
Okay. So that... I think there's a Seinfeld where Seinfeld does this thing. Like,
yeah,
this,
it's
like,
no driver.
So anyways, so my chavrusa, Gabe Pollack, who's a law school student right now, said, I told him I was doing this year. He sent me this article that he's actually taking employment labor law right now, class in labor law right now. So his teacher happened to send out today this article. Apparently, court reverses NLRB, says stagehands are contractors, not employees. So I don't know how stagehands are hired, but apparently this court case, there was a judge who ruled that Atlanta area stagehands are contractors, not employees. The 11th Circuit ruled last week. And so doing the court reversed the finding by the National Labor Relations Board that stagehands placed through Crew One Productions were employees entitled to union representation.
Because they're probably hired per play.
Right.
Right,
they're hired per play, and they don't go with the job or something. So they were instead the court found. So what is this definition? That Crew One exercised too little control over stagehands for them to be considered employees. So the California rule. We realize these are different definitions of what it means to be a worker versus California ruled that it's economically dependent. And the only way you're getting the job is through X. Therefore, you're an employee of X, regardless of how the payment system is set up. While in Georgia, they ruled that it's how much do they have responsibility over you? How much can they direct you? If they just want the job done, so they don't really care how you clean up the stage or set up the curtains or something.
If you want a stagehand union in Georgia, that would be how you'd do it.
You would have to have a separate union, not one that...
Like an actor's guild or...
Right. I'll leave it to them to figure it out on their own how to take care of that. But it says the finding could have an impact on similar lawsuits throughout the country about sharing economy companies like Uber. That this seems to say that we would put the Uber driver back into the poal category rather than into the koblin category rather than the poal category. Okay, so other than some details within Choshen Mishpat about whether you could back out of the job or things that happen on the job, things like that, are there any other ramifications? And I think that there is a significant one, and that is if a Jew would own Uber. would they be able to operate if it wasn't Uber, if it was Juber, would such a company be permitted to operate 7 days a week? So that is a very that has a lot of ramifications in our daily life. This entire book, Commerce and Shabbos, is based on dealing with these issues of how does one negotiate that distinction, what ramifications are there for what could happen on Shabbos and what can't, which all of a sudden nowadays having more and more things, having an online store, these are all things he talks about here, having an online store, having having soda machines, or having owning Redbox things, although that's probably going out of business also one of these days. But setting up those kinds of things, how is one permitted to earn that kind of money on Shabbos? Or if you own a nursing home, right? So nursing homes have to operate on Shabbos. Things happen on Shabbos. Owning a hospital, all of these are issues for a Jewish owner. So the basic halacha is as follows. The Shulchan Aruch says, "Sholeach adam igeres biyad inu Yehudi v'afilu be'erev Shabbos im chashecha." One is permitted to send a letter with a non-Jew, even if it's right before Shabbos. V'hu shekatz etzlo damim, assuming that he sets up and gives him the amount of money before, that he puts a stamp on it. As long as he doesn't say to him that I want you to take it on Shabbos. So why is that? So the Mishnah Brura explains, V'im ha'enu Yehudi, Amar mi'atzmo, but if he says by himself, She'ilach b'Shabbos, Leislan ba, you don't have a problem. Kivan she'yisra, lo amar lo ze, because the Jew didn't tell him to do it. V'enu Yehudi, adaiti d'nafshi ka'avit b'shvil s'chiruseha. And the non-Jew did it on their own because they want to make the money. So that is the simple one. A Jew is not permitted to be paying another Jew to work on Shabbos as their worker. If you own a business, you're not allowed to have that business open on Shabbos. But if you have a job to be done to an independent contractor, so you can't be paying your poel, but you could be paying your kablan. You could be paying somebody who's doing a job for you, even if they are doing it on Shabbos. A similar halacha is found five siman. The Baal, we're talking about paying non-Jews to do these jobs on Shabbos. The question of the Baal Kori is not so much on the paying person. The question is more on the Baal Kori accepting the money. That's beyond the scope of tonight's conversation. There's two questions, by the way, with the Baal Kori. A, whether it's mutter, and B, whether he will ever get a bracha from it. Seems like there's two different discussions from it.
Paying him for his crap.
That's one way of him getting the bracha. I mean, in theory, you're allowed to pay him. I remember when I was a waiter on Shabbos. So I was in high school. I was a waiter for many years on Shabbos, and everyone's asking if Shechter about it. He says, "Well, you're doing a mitzvah. You're giving people their suza Shabbos. So therefore, you're doing a mitzvah. So you're allowed to be paid for it." However, there is a separate gemara that those who work on Shabbos ain't a row of simin bracha. That they're not going to see a simin bracha from their work. So So a similar halacha is found in source number 5. Umutu litein begadav lechobes eino Yehudi v'oros la'avdan. So you're permitted to give your garment to the non-Jew and your things for them, your oros, your skins for them to tan, for them to do tanning on. Samach l'chashecha. V'im katzis lo damim, osha osa osa betova sana. As long as you set the amount of money or the amount of things that benefit that they're going to get. As long as you don't say that they're supposed to do it on Shabbos. Vigam, and also, this is also an important condition, Shiyasa in a Yehudi Hamalacha Beveso, as long as they're doing the job in their house. So that those are really the two main conditions.
They're not out in the square doing it or not in your house doing it.
They can't be in your house. Well, they can't be in your house doing it. What's the issue? The issue is that it looks bad for it to be clearly seen that a Jew's work is being done for them on Shabbos. That's the problem. So they can't do it in your house because then it'll be clear. If they do it in the square, so then the question is, will anybody know that they're doing your work? So if the cleaners across the street is open on Shabbos, so you can give them your stuff on Friday, and they could decide to do it on Shabbos. I don't think anybody walking by on their way to shul is going to look into the cleaners and say, "Oh, I was at Rabbi Gross's house when his son spilled that on his pants. Now I see it." Right? Nobody's going to see that. So one could assume that is going to be okay. But if it's clear, so for example, a person has a car that is a unique car, that anybody driving by knows that that's a Jew's car. So that would be problematic to have the non-Jew working on Shabbos if it's in a place that's going to be visible, that Jewish people are going to see it. So that's condition. So condition A is that it can't be recognizable that it's a Jew stuff. Condition B is that the Jew can't tell him specifically to do it on Shabbos, or he can't require it to be done on Shabbos. So for me to go to the cleaners and say to the cleaners on Friday afternoon, listen, I need this done by Saturday night, so that would be a problem, because they're clearly going to be doing it on Shabbos. There are a lot of detailed questions there of, let's say I go to the cleaners on right before Shabbos and say to them, I need it by Monday morning. So I'm telling them they need to do it on Shabbos. Why? Not because I'm telling them to do it on Shabbos, but because they're closed Sunday. Mm-hmm. So is that this idea of Amir al-Akam being a problem if they're going to do it on Shabbos, is it a problem based on their schedule or based on my schedule? And then you have a further question. Let's say I say to them, listen, I need it done by Sunday morning. So if I tell them, so they're going to be doing it on Shabbos. So the other option is they could do it Saturday night, but what cleaners is open on Saturday night? That's not a logical time for them to do it. So there's when they have a choice of closing, or B, when they it's possible for them to do it, but they're not going to be doing it during that time. So the details of that are hazy and subject to machlokas. I got a question a couple of months ago. Somebody in California wanted somebody to buy bagels for them in Teaneck and ship it across the country to California Sunday morning. So buy bagels Friday morning and get it to California by Sunday morning. Now, I don't think it was going to work. I just don't think... Like, the whole point is that the bagels are better in Teaneck. I don't think... Yeah, it wasn't going to work. But anyways, the question is an interesting question. So can you in theory get bagels from the East Coast to the West Coast from Friday morning to Sunday morning without it traveling on Shabbos? The answer is yes, you could. Why not? Why are you looking at me like that? You get it to the shipping place on Friday morning by 8 o'clock. You realize with the time change, you're going to get it to California before Shabbos starts. I don't think that was an issue. And besides that, even if they wait till after Shabbos, so after Shabbos also, you could... It's not illogical that Federal Express is going to be flying planes across the country in the middle of the night. That's not a crazy suggestion.
Yeah, that's what they do.
Right. That's what they do for a living. They fly planes across the country in the middle of the night.
I'm saying you get 2-day service, so they won't travel on the first day, they'll travel on the second day.
Right. Yeah, so I thought that there was enough leeway there that you'd be able to work it out. There is one other issue here about what's this whole issue with the time being set. So the Mishnah Berurah comments with the payment being set, that you have to have a set amount of money that has been agreed to beforehand. So the Mishnah Berurah says that if you don't have the time set, so then you have to get it to them before Shabbos Kadesh Yasu. You have to get them before Shabbos in order that they have enough time to finish it. So if you need a website developed, that's his example, but not a very advanced website developed. So it's going to take 5 hours to be done. So in theory, I could go to him and say, listen, I need it by Monday morning, and I'm paying you a couple $100 for it to be done, and the person could work on it over Shabbos, because in theory, instead of working on Shabbos, they could work it on Sunday. That's not an issue. But if I say to them, I'm going to give it to you, I need the website set, we'll figure out the price later, so then I need to have the amount of time set beforehand. Seemingly, from my understanding, is because otherwise the person's going to feel pressure to get it done earlier rather than later. So because you're kind of putting that pressure on them without the price already set beforehand, that's kind of like a gezeira that you need to get it done earlier. So that's those are the issues with Poel versus Kablan. Yeah? Good so far. Okay. A really entirely different, I shouldn't say entirely different set of issues, a somewhat entirely different set of issues is the issue of them coming into a city and taking over and putting cabs out of business. Now, are cabs really being put out of business by this? When I was in California, I was told that a couple thousand cab drivers, and they're all like a specific nationality, it was mentioned, I forget which one, were all of a sudden let go, and I wasn't, like, I was a little nervous about this. All of a sudden, these couple thousand people are now on the streets without jobs. Right? So it seems like they are putting people out of business.
We're deciding not to call taxis instead of and using Uber instead.
Right. Any individual, right, you're clearly taking money away and putting it into Uber.
If you look at New York City, for instance, Uber, the presence of Uber and Lyft, et cetera, has markedly devalued the value of a medallion.
Right.
So that has enormous economic impact. Medallions were selling for around $1 million.
Oh, really? That much?
Selling for about $200,000.
Uh-huh. Right. Okay. Right. There you go. So they clearly have had an economic impact. So is that enough to make a claim back and say, well, sorry, we're not going to do it just in order to maintain the market? Whatever America has, America laws, so we're going to concentrate on Jewish laws. Let's say it was Juber, again, wanting to operate in Kiryat Sefer, in place of the cabs that are already operational. So what would we say to such people? So there is a somewhat lengthy sugya in Bava Basra, in the second parak of Bava Basra, where it discusses people coming in and setting up shops, and whether, actually this is also discussing zoning of...
Isn't there a concept about not...
Yeah, that's this concept. Yeah. Hasagas Kvul. Hasagas Kvul is the term that's normally used. Right. Of course, Masig Gvul in the Torah is not really talking about this. That's talking about like moving over the boundaries of your land. Like, but it's... In halacha, it's hasagas gvul is this category of taking over somebody's boundaries. So the Gemara is actually talking.
So what's that translated to?
Like conquering the boundary, like.
Okay.
So the sugya is actually about zoning. Can you declare such businesses shouldn't take place in my backyard? I don't want the tannery across the street from me, or I don't want the day school, or I don't want a shul. I don't want certain businesses in my vicinity because of extra traffic, or it's going to smell bad, or whatever the reasons are. So in the context of that, also a discussion of can you demand certain businesses not come to a certain city because I don't want them in the city because it will upset the economy of that particular city. So it's a long sugya, the way and goes back and forth, but it seems that the conclusion is that Amar Rav Huna Bered Rav Yeshua, it's also Rav Huna is the other opinion, so it's Rav Huna Bered Rav Yeshua, it's this opinion, Pshitali Bar Masa Achrisi Matzi Ma'aki, that if somebody from a different city is coming to this city, so you can keep them out. But if they are already paying taxes here, so then I can't keep them out. So anybody in this city has the right to set up a business in this city. And it seems like that's the end. It goes on to talk about a different mavoy. If it's from one courtyard to the next courtyard, that might be a little more question. That might be more questionable. Maybe even that would be allowed, or maybe you could keep them out. That's a question. But certainly, if you're already in the city and seemingly paying taxes within that city, so you have the right to operate a business in that city without regard for what other businesses are already operational within that city. That seems to be what the Gemara is saying. So, by the way, this goes back into the Kablin, could go back into the Kablin versus Poel discussion. Who's moving into the city when Uber sets up a business here? Is Uber moving into the city? Or are all these people that own cars in the city deciding that, oh, we're going to open up our own individual taxi services? Right? In which case, you would have much more rights to do it. Correct. So the Mordechai quotes from the Kasav Avi Asaf. He says, Re'isu b'peyosh Rabbeinu Tam. Source number 8. V'shayach b'charga d'masa sherotza lios shayach b'charga l'seisi mahen. Right, v'lisa ba'ol k'mo b'nei a'ir. Mikan v'eilach lo matzim a'akev. That what's the time limit there? Can a person just move in? So the Avi Yosef says, yeah. As soon as a person starts paying taxes, they're in the city. And he says, ulahachi nagu ligzor ha'kadmonim cheirem al yishuv. And that's why, in order to regulate these businesses, they used to set up a chirim. I mean, the people of the city would set up rules about it in order to keep people out. So what's he saying that's very interesting? Don't look at that Gemara in Bava Basra in order to keep people out of the city. But don't think that a Jewish society doesn't have the right to keep businesses out. I mean, it's
even,
not
even if the people in the new business are in the city
or in the city. Well, he was really speaking about people coming in and paying taxes for a day and whatever. But in theory, even within the city, right? That's what he would be claiming. Don't say that it's about it's about that Gemara Bava Basra necessarily, but the leadership of the city has the right to set the rules and regulations for the businesses that are going to take place in that city, even with outside the context of that Gemara Bava Basra.
Okay.
It's guilt.
Guilds. Okay. The guilds would then keep that person out, right? Unless you're too big for the guild, right? Which I guess, in a way, Uber is too big. I mean, don't leave it to the taxi cab drivers. Say, well, you stay out because otherwise we won't.
Right.
You know, we'll honk you at the airport. Like,
we'll stop traffic
until you a guild's only powerful until they lose their leverage. Once you're too big, so they don't have the leverage anymore. So these questions come up when you come up. Often, I mean, one can see them pretty often. The classic question is when there's a pizza shop in town and someone wants to open up a second pizza shop. Right? There's a bakery, someone wants to open a second bakery, and these are a shoe store. Yeah, so often the way it's thought about is X versus Y. That owner A doesn't want owner B to open up the shop because it's going to be a problem for owner A. So what the Nemuke Yosef quotes from the Rimagash. Gosh, it's an early Rishon, is don't necessarily look. There's really three characters here. There's the guy who owns the store. There's B, the guy who wants to start a new store, and who's C?
Customers.
C are the customers. Don't forget about the customers. And the Nemuke Yosef writes that the Hainu, this issue, line number three there, Dafka hecha delo muzle tiritvei. As I'm reading the Matsu Ma'akve about E. Mosley Tfe, Ha'ikat Kanes Lochim. Says this is only if they're not going to drop the price at all. That person is just opening up a new store and there's going to be a new store. But if there's going to be a significant price reduction, don't forget about Tekanas Halokhim. Who are they? The buyers. Don't forget about the buyers. That they also have a right, that competition is good, and if it's going to bring down the price for them, so then that should be enough of an impetus to open something up. He says, my opinion, this is the Nemuke Yosef, who's the commentary in the back of Abbasra, he makes a distinction between whether it's going to be a lot of money or a little money. He says, if it's a little money, if it's only going to be a small price reduction, well, anybody could just make a small price reduction. That's not going to help. But only if it's a significant price reduction, so don't forget about the customers that are not going to be able to pay less money. That is the claim. So how do we pass? Do we accept that idea, la'alacha, that will keep somebody, that we won't keep somebody out if they're able to lower the price? So the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, in source number 10, Aval ger b'medina acheres shebo lasos chenvas b'tzad chenvuso shel zeh, o merchatz b'tzad merchatzo shel zeh. Somebody wants to open up a new store next to the other store, or a new bathhouse next to the other bathhouse. So yesh lehem lemono. One could keep them out. However, v'imaya nosin imam menas ha-melech, but if they pay the tax, inam yichol lemono. So you can't keep them out. They have the right to do it. Comes the Ramah, and says v'rabim ha'omrim da'filu hachi ein lo reshus lichanes lamavoy sheyesh sham b'nei umnaso. That even so, many say that even so, they don't have the right to come into a mavoy where there's already people that are doing that job. V'al umnos yachol la'akei v'lav, you can keep them out, shalu yichanes lamavoy shalu hol v'hu me'ir acheres, because he's really like from it, he's another place. V'im lo nasan
ma'... He's paying the tax.
Well, for the city, but yeah. a neighborhood has the right to say we're going to restrict it to our neighborhood. He quotes it as a yish virat. Many say that individual that just because you pay a tax in Philadelphia doesn't mean that you have a right to go across town and open something in someone else's neighborhood. He says v'im lo nasan masar akshav, and if he hasn't paid the tax yet, uval lasak mulach uval tismas, he just came to do work and give the tax. He's paying the tax all of a sudden because he wants to open up his business. Yishom davarim nasu yachul akivul, and people can keep him out as well.
Hey, so just paying the tax is not defining the new
pay tax for a day. You have to become part of the city. So how do you become part of the city?
So there's other sugyas about that. So I'm not going to be a citizen if I pay tax.
Yeah, and when a person comes into... There's an amount of time. You have to be there in order to earn the right to open your store. Okay. Then the Ramah, two sifim later, adds in the idea of Yesh Orm Dahav De B'nei Ha'ir Yechol Nimchos B'nei Yer Acheres Hainu Dafka B'deleika Pseidu D'Lekuchos. That's only if there won't be a diminishing of price for the buyer. Shemochim Kashar B'nei Ha'ir V'gam Socharosim Ein Atova Yosim Yishel B'nei Ha'ir. That that they're just going to be selling it like everybody else. But if they're going to be giving it much cheaper, so then that it will benefit the buyers, so then you're not able to keep them out. So,
presuming that's exactly the same product.
Right. Now, halacha doesn't necessarily define only the price as cheaper, also if it's more convenient. So what are the benefits of Uber? Right. I think it is cheaper. A little bit, right? It is cheaper. It's more beneficial because people, there's more drivers around. You're able to get a driver faster. Is that true?
In theory, depends on the time of day.
And it's more convenient. Plus, you have a phone. You can just do it right on your phone.
If you have a smartphone, then it's less.
Yeah, it's easier to pay.
Easier to pay. So for all those reasons, it's hard to claim that there's a real...
Take looking at something very different. Look at small kosher butcher shops. And when supermarkets came in and established a kosher...
Right.
Yeah, right.
So I put on... Oh, hold on. Yes, right. So I put on these two further sources on. I didn't put in the source itself. But there is the Rama himself, meaning the Rama who gave those restrictions. That's all he says. He has a responsa. There's a whole fight about a printer that somebody had the right to print. I think it was the Rambam. Someone printed a Rambam, and then someone else used their work in order to print another Rambam. And the first one was taking the first one to the court. And the Rama paskind that if the first one was clearly not going to be able to earn a living as a result of the second one, so then you would keep the second one out. So that the Rama has a response about that. Now there is a big issue with that. Wait a second. Why didn't you put it in the Shulchan Aruch then? Mm-hmm. Right. So which one is it? So that is that issue is being debated. Adayom hazeh. It continuously is debated. The issue with the large stores putting out of business the small store. That's a question.
The supermarkets aren't Jewish.
They're not Jewish, and they're not going to be bound by our rules. But the supermarkets are under our hashkacha. So should the hashkacha decide that we're not going to give hashkacha to somebody who's going to put someone else out of business? So my reading out there is that generally these things do not get Things are approved. Usually business continues on. That seems to be the trend that things are going. It's generally assumed that more business is good. But in smaller... I think the challenge... Where I would be hesitant is where the larger company could come in, open up, put everyone else out of business, and decide it's not worth it and leave. Right?
Yeah.
So such things happen, and that's where hashkachas are based, bati dinim, or anybody that's involved with this kind of stuff has to be careful. I think that makes a lot of sense. And then the other thing that's out there is if there is a significant reason why, if it's not a fair competition, so then it also would be challenging. If there is a specific reason why A is able to get something over B, so then that could also tilt the balance. Such as the Shaul HaMeshiv. The Shaul HaMeshiv was asked a question about a license, something about some issue with license, that somebody had a license to sell something, and someone else started selling that stuff without a license. So the person with the license wanted to know if he could report him to the authorities. Right? So there's two issues. A, report them to the authorities, or B, just report them to Beis Din and let Beis Din shut them down. Right? There's two. Reporting to the authorities is a little bit more, there's a higher stakes to that idea. So if the idea of requiring this license was to limit the sellers, it seems to be that then you would be allowed to report them. That person is then in violation of that law. But if the idea of having these licenses was in order to make money, in order to be able to make money, this person is now undercutting or something like that. So then it's questionable. But if having that license is what is allowing that person to undercut you, so then that would be a reason then to go to Beis Din. That wouldn't necessarily be a reason to go to the non-Jewish government, but there might be a reason to go to Beis Din and having Beis Din in that way shut him down. So that then lends itself to the taxi thing. Was if you have medallions versus a person then undercutting you without having the medallions, So it's subject to a debate. You might be able to tell my leaning generally is the more free enterprise, but there are some times that I would think that person has a pretty good case to claim a Suggis Kvul and perhaps hold somebody back from going into business. Stop here.